Toyota learns there's no escape from the microchip shortage. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. First, the stock market has opened lower today after notes from the Fed's last meeting came out. This is from late July, these notes, and they did nothing to shake the view that some of the central bank stimulus could ramp down a bit in the coming weeks. In early trading, the Dow is down 83 points, 0.2%, similar percentage drop for the S&P 500. During the worst moments, as the first pandemic lockdowns were ordered in March of 2020, central bankers thought these measures would stop a public health and economic crisis from becoming a financial crisis. The Fed is buying $120 billion a month in treasury bonds and mortgage-backed securities. That can make borrowing cheaper and easier in the wider economy, in theory.
It's not clear at all that that's needed anymore, even with the Delta variant, and that's what the Fed is going to have to determine.
On Thursdays, we consult Diane Swonk, the chief economist at Grant Thornton.
There is this uncertainty of the spillover effects. So what happens, because the Fed is the central bank to the rest of the world, whether we like it or not, and the Delta variant is also hitting other countries even harder than it is the U.S. at the moment.
I will say, though, the stock market really whines when they start talking about tapering, because it makes bonds more attractive and maybe some money might come out of stocks.
Yeah, you know, cry me a river. I mean, I just, at the end of the day, what really matters is, you know, what are the fundamentals for the economy, what's warranted and what's not. And that's difficult to figure out at any point in time. And this is really more of an art than a science.
Economist Diane Swonk. Toyota has been able to keep its production up despite the global shortage of semiconductor chips that's hobbled the competition until now. There's news Toyota will cut car and truck making here and around the world by 40% next month. Here's Marketplace's Nova Safo.
Toyota had managed to avoid the fate of its rivals, who've cut production off and on due to a lack of auto-grade semiconductor chips. That's been caused by pandemic disruptions and a fire at a chip-making factory earlier this year. But Toyota had a stockpile of chips thanks to a continuity plan created after the big 2011 earthquake in Japan. Now, the company says, it's starting to feel the chip shortage too. It will cut September production at more than a dozen factories. In all, the cut will total about 360,000 vehicles. Another auto giant, Germany's Volkswagen, says it can't rule out more production cuts either. And in the U.S., Ford will shutter its truck assembly plant in Kansas City for 1 week starting Monday. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
With pandemic distortions making it hard to recruit employees, it was teenagers to the rescue. New government numbers this week put the youth labor force at 22.5 million strong in July, but now they're going back to school. Marketplace's Amanda Peacher has that.
In Cedar Park, Texas, Alonzo Solis says he's been working double shifts at his tropical smoothie cafe.
Making smoothies, making food. There's times where I'm on dishes for an hour, hour and a half.
Solis owns the cafe, but he's filling in on the floor in part because some teenage workers are headed back to school.
I always tell the kids that there's never a job I'm going to ask you to do that I haven't done myself.
About 20 out of 25 workers at his cafes are teens, and Solis wants to keep them. If they say,
I have track or I have basketball.
Solis will work around their schedules. Economist Paul Harrington at Drexel University says that's key.
So I think that flexibility would probably be an important feature to your ability to recruit and retain kids.
That's good for businesses in this time when it's so hard to find workers. But Harrington also says
work experience is good for kids.
He points out teens who work tend to save more money and end up better off financially long term. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
For my Econ Extra Credit project, we're watching one documentary a month on Marketplace themes. This time, it's a film that blew me away. It's called Through the Night, How to Run a 24-Hour Childcare Facility Out of a Home for the Kids of People Working Overnight or Evening Shifts or Multiple Jobs. The caregivers here are super pros, but they're exhausted, as are the parents. The kids, for their part, are fabulous. The economic lessons right there, what economists call a failed market. High demand, but prices can't rise because the parents can't pay more. For context, let's turn to my American Public Media colleague Mariana Dale, who reports on early childhood issues at public radio station KPCC in California. She's lead producer on Childcare Unfiltered, following the lives over time of childcare workers and providers. Mariana, thank you for joining us here.
Thank you for having me.
When you see how close to the bone the finances are of many childcare facilities, it's almost as if these are less businesses and more, I don't know, labors of love. I mean, you've run into providers who pay out of their own pocket to make sure their children, clients are getting what they need?
Oh, absolutely. And early educators around the country hold some of the lowest paid jobs. The national median salary is $11.65 an hour. This means when families need stuff like diapers, they need food to take home. I've talked to providers who are going out to Target and spending their own money to provide this for families. And when families need care that they can't pay for, it's really hard for them to say no. And that has consequences. I talked to a provider in Lancaster who knows that she needs hearing aids, but she cannot front the money to afford them. They know that the families they serve often can't afford to pay any more than they already do.
I mean, that last part is key to a lot of this. Economists might see child care as what they call, economists call, a failed market. The demand is there, right? People need it. The supply is limited. Normally in a market, that would mean the price rises. But child care centers are limited in what they can charge, right? Because how much can parents pay?
Right. Childcare is already one of the most expensive things that families pay for. And there's a fundamental gap between the cost of high quality childcare and what any one source can really provide, whether that's parents, you know, state or federal funding, or even philanthropy.
One of the features of this film we're watching this month is you see how often the people running the childcare center are cleaning surfaces. This was filmed before pandemic. You know, that stuff got pretty expensive during pandemic, didn't it? The cleaning supplies.
Oh, absolutely. I heard multiple providers tell me about $20 cans of Lysol that they were having to buy to keep their facilities clean. They were purchasing masks and protective equipment for their families and for their staff, while at the same time, they were often able to serve fewer families, either because of public health guidelines or because of just dropping enrollment and concern from families. And so the business model of childcare really fell apart.
Mariana Dale, early childhood reporter at KPCC, lead producer on their recent reporting project called Childcare Unfiltered. KPCC is part of the same company that produces Marketplace. Mariana, thank you.
Thank you.
We also talked today to Laura Limbaugh, director of this month's film, who embedded with the round-the-clock childcare place run by a pair of heroes. Marketplace.org, if you missed that conversation on the air. The film can be rented one-off from Amazon or by subscription, PBS Documentary Channel. You can sign up for our Econ Extra Credit newsletter, marketplace.org/newsletters. That is nice and free. I'm David Brancaccio with our morning report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.